Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
All righty. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dealmakers Show. So today we have another founder, you know, joining us, another founder with an incredible story. I mean, he's done it a bunch of times. You know, the first time, you know, it was a smashing hit, you know, with a rumored transaction of $400 million, you know, which was the exit. And now he's on his latest, you know, journey, you know, with a rocket ship that he's building, you know, that they actually he joined and that he's helping to build and that we're going to be talking about. So again, we're going to be talking about the building, the scaling, the financing. We're going to be talking about being first to market, competing with the big guys, raising money, and also being able to land top tier VCs, as well as, you know, going about building a new team and all of the above. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Jorge Misne. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
So originally born and raised in Uruguay. So give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up over there?
It was really great. So I was born in Montevideo, that is the capital, about 1.5 million people. Very friendly place, close to the beach, nice weather. Actually similar to California, the Silicon Valley where I am now here. So it was really, really great.
That's amazing. Now, in your case, you know, it sounds like, you know, you got into the whole idea of computers and engineering, you know, quite early. So what really got you into computers to begin?
So I always knew I wanted to be an engineer from a young age. I remember myself playing with the Sinclair, for those who are old enough to know that, the ZX and the Commodore 64, and going to a computer course. I remember the first Mexico 1986, the soccer world championship, doing a program to basically keep the scores out of that. So since then, I knew that I wanted to go into engineering and specifically into electrical engineering. And that's what I did.
So then, you know, right after getting your degrees, you know, it sounds like it didn't take much time for you to pack the bags and get going to Israel. So why Israel out of all places?
So I like the chip design and all the anything that has to do with that. In Uruguay at that time, there was not a lot of chip research. The only place you could do anything like that was at the university. So I joined the university for some time and then got an opportunity to go to Israel and got recruited into Intel in Israel. So that's when I decided I moved to Israel and started working at Intel.
So for you, I mean, it sounds like when you joined, there was not a lot of people. And then by the time you decided to pack the bags, it was quite a big team. You know, how was that growth?
So I joined there. Actually, I got the option to join the processors team or a new group that was doing Wi-Fi. This was 1999. So this was a very small team, about 30 people when I got to Israel. And that then became Centrino, that everybody probably remembers. So we did like four generations of chipsets on the Wi-Fi side until 2007, that together with other three co-workers, we decided to pack our bags and start a new thing. And that was basically Wilocity.
That's amazing. So I guess, you know, let's talk about that, you know, packing the bags and getting going with Wilocity. I mean, what really fueled that idea? What was that incubation process all the way to getting, you know, going with the company?
So I remember, you know, I was very comfortable at Intel at that time, you know, a good job, a good salary, doing things that I liked. So one day decided, okay, let's do something else. Let's leave all this. Let's jump into the water and or into the pool. And we don't even know if there is water. So we started to think about, there was a new technology starting. So we started to think, oh, we can do something about this. And at some point, I always wanted to do something by myself and not just work for somebody. And at that time, I was 29, if I remember correctly. And it was, okay, if I want to do it, this is the time to do it. And these are the people that I believe, if anybody can do it, these are the people that can do it. So I remember talking to my wife at that time saying, okay, let's jump. And we jumped.
So what ended up being the business model of Wellocity? How are you guys making money there?
So Wellocity developed 60 gigahertz wireless chipsets. So what we today know as 5G. So this was a precursor of 5G that is called millimeter wave. So these high frequencies is where basically there is space available and you can go very, very fast. So it was challenging. 2007, this was before AI, so pretty much nobody was investing in silicon. So getting the first round was very challenging. It took us about 6 months until we got the seed money. But we ended up getting Benchmark and Sequoia. There are two very known VCs. And that's how we started. Now, on the technological side, up until that time, all the chipsets that were designed were only up to 5-6 gigahertz. So any fab that manufactures the chips will give you models up to 10 gigahertz. And that's what you use to model your design and simulate your design. We needed 60 gigahertz, so there were no models. So the fabs didn't have models, so we had to basically build our own models. So we'll just fabricate a chip that was lines and very basic structures that then we had to measure and build the models. So there was a lot of, I would say, R&D in order to get there.
So what do you think, you know, needed to happen? Because, I mean, if you're for 6 months raising money, you know, anyone would typically like throw the towel, you know, and be like, oh my God, this is just not working out. But it's just amazing that after 6 months, you're able to land, you know, some heavy hitters like Sequoia or Benchmark. So what do you think was that turning point for them to come on board?
So I think it was kind of a validation of the market. Since the beginning, they showed interest. They liked the team. The four founders, we were very experienced coming from the field, knowing exactly what it will take to do it. They needed to get some more validation from companies. So we had to work with a lot of the big name companies, trying to explain what the product will be. And try to get feedback from them that they were interested. So once we were able to do that and get people around the idea of what we were trying to do, that's where the VCs said, okay, this makes sense. Let's go.
So in total for the company, you know, prior to the acquisition, how much capital was raised?
We raised about $100 million.
And what was that process like of raising that money? Because, I mean, it was also during the crazy times of 08 and, you know, and really going through all of that financial, you know, craziness in the world. You know, I mean, it was pretty shaky and bumpy.
Yeah. So we started in 2007. The first round was 2007. And then we, of course, have had everything planned. Now, we were lucky that we raised the A round a little bit before the crisis. So in 2008, before everything went south. So when we got into the crisis, we had money in the bank. That helped us to go through the storm. While we had money, we had to change some of the plans. We had to slow down. We even had to let go some of the people because it was completely unclear where things will go. So I would say 2009 was very, very challenging. And then going into 2010 is when things became more clear, and then we started to accelerate.
So I guess, you know, for something like this, like what you guys were doing, I mean, one thing that was probably frightening, you know, was to all of a sudden see that you're first to market and then you see yourself that Intel is rolling out something that is competing against you. I'm sure that was not fun.
It's not fun, but actually it's a validation you are on the right path, right? If you have a company like Intel running after you, then you did something right. At the same time, I would say that small companies, while they can be the first to market, they have the first mover advantage, they cannot make the market. In order to make the market, you need one of the big companies. And Intel is known for making markets and big markets. So actually, we tried to run as fast as we could. We tried to build the best product that we could do. But we knew that when we were talking with the potential customers, we didn't need to explain too much why this technology is going to happen. Because if Intel is also offering a product later, that means that this market is going to happen.
So then how was that acquisition process? Because, I mean, the company ended up getting acquired by Qualcomm. And I'm sure it was it was a smashing outcome, you know, according, you know, to the word of the street, it was about $400 million. But what was that process like?
So the process was, I have to say that prior to Qualcomm, there was a company called Atheros that was a Wi-Fi semiconductor company that was later acquired by Qualcomm. So Atheros invested in Wilocity very early. There was a second, and the second round they invested. And then when they were acquired by Qualcomm continued to invest in all the rounds. So we were working very closely with Qualcomm. And at some point we started the company working on PC products. This was 2007, so it's even before the iPhone. Right. At some point, 2010, 2011, we started to move into more of a mobile centric solution. And we started to work with some of the big names, Samsung, Apple, etc. So the moment that these companies started to seriously look at our product, that was when Qualcomm and others started to look and say, okay, this is interesting. And well, from there, they made an offer and ended up closing with Qualcomm.
Hey, guys. So pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So what was that process like where all of a sudden, you know, this acquisition is done and, you know, here you are, you know, an immigrant in the US, you know, and all of a sudden you hit the American dream. You know, how did that feel for you?
It was very interesting because for a short period of time, you say, oh, wow, I did. But then you forget, kind of forget, right? And you run, you know, we moved into Qualcomm and we, you know, you have people that move with you. So you are responsible for them and you try to integrate them into the new company. You try to make sure that they are good in the new company. So there is a lot of responsibility. And while, you know, financially there might be a good outcome, you still have a lot of work to do and you need to make sure that, you know, everything continues and you continue to deliver, right? So it's incredible how fast you forget about that, right? And you enter into the day-to-day and you say, okay, I need to make sure that my people are okay and you keep growing. Once we moved to Qualcomm, we almost doubled the team. And so it's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, no kidding. So at Qualcomm, you were there for a couple of years. And then basically, you know, as they say, once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur, you know, it became time, you know, to really get going with your next company, you know, which ended up becoming Chameleon. So what were you doing there? Because I think that was a very interesting transition where you are now taking the reins as the CEO for the first time, going from the technical side to the business side. So how was that transition for you as well?
Yeah, so when I moved to the US, I kind of started that slow transition between the technical world and more of the customer engagement and product world. And definitely with Chameleon, I took on the role of the CEO. So also here I have three more partners. So we were four co-founders, and it was really interesting as a technical person that sometimes you need to take a step back, let the technical people do their things, even though you might know something, right? But at the same time, you understand enough to ask the right questions and understand where the challenges are, where the problems are, and try to facilitate how you go over those things.
So with Chameleon, what were you guys doing there?
So with Chameleon, we did basically a hardware security solution for servers, mainly protecting servers at the time that they boot, right? So what it's called secure boot, making sure that nothing was changed. And when you turn on a server, all the software that is loaded before the operating system is loaded is authentic, hasn't been touched. So all those kind of things cannot be done in software because this happens before the software, what we call software, right, at the application or operating system level loads. So all that was what we were doing there.
So with Chameleon, how did you guys go about, for example, like capitalizing the operation? What did that look like?
So we leverage a lot of the contacts that we had before, right? So basically the product was tailored for cloud providers and server OEMs. So those were some of the people that we were working before in Wilocity and in Qualcomm. So basically, we were able to tap into those relationships. And at the same time, when we started the team, so most of the engineering team was in Israel. I was living in the US. Some of my partners were in Israel. And we were also tapping into some of the people that we have been working before, right? So the core team of Chameleon have been working before together in Wilocity and Qualcomm.
So then for this, I mean, you guys ended up basically going through a merger. So I know also that this was the first time that you would venture into the security world. So I guess, what was that experience and like? And then also, like, why did you guys ended up going through a merger?
At that time, this was, so we went through COVID and we ended up with some pre-COVID and post-COVID effects, right? Especially in the cloud world, I would say. The pre-COVID effects when COVID hit, right, everybody moved to remote and everybody moved to the cloud. So the need for cloud just went bananas, right? So internally, we were working with some of the cloud providers and they had to cancel the next generation projects because they didn't have enough servers to support the demand that they had. Now, at the same time, if you remember, we had all the parts, the supply shortage. So they couldn't get parts to build more servers to be able to support that demand. So they had to redesign the servers with whatever parts were available in order to be able to work and support that demand. That means that all the projects that were kind of next generation project, they just got delayed. Now, at the same time, it was very clear that after that spike in demand, there will be a drop. Right. And it was very clear that that spike was not real. Right. So after that, it will just be too much supply and not enough demand. So that's where we started to see, OK, what do we do? What is the right approach for the company? And we were working with another company and we say, OK, it makes sense to join forces and basically merge.
So then what happened after that merger? Because it didn't take long for you to pack the bags.
Yeah, so after that merger, I personally decided to leave. I was flying to Israel once a month. It's a long flight. It's a long distance. And then I work as an advisor and a Silicon Accelerator here in the Bay Area. And one of their events, I met a company called Niobium doing basically compute on encrypted data. So it's a new type of encryption that allows you to basically compute on data that is encrypted without needing to decrypt the data. So ended up talking to them. And this was something that at Chameleon, we were looking as something that was starting, and it was very interesting to me. So ended up joining the team. Again, a very small team. We were about 18 people when I joined. This company got a grant from DARPA to build an accelerator for FHE, full homomorphic encryption. That's the name of this technology. And basically, I lead all the product and go-to-market activities at Niobe.
So I guess, I mean, you're an entrepreneur. You have it in you. You've started a couple of companies now. Why not starting another one? Why joining someone else? Wondering.
So this company came from the, Niobium was a spin-off from another company called Galois that is an R&D company working for the US government, mainly DOD, Department of Defense. And it started as a project for DARPA, not as a product company. And I like the challenge for me was kind of starting from scratch, understanding where to take that product, how to work the go-to-market, how to build the company and steer it into the right direction. So that's it.
So then I guess for you now, I mean, incredible entrepreneurial journey, no, as well. I guess if you had the opportunity of going back in time, you know, let's say I give you a time machine and you're able to go back in time to maybe that moment where you were working at Intel and back in Israel and you were thinking about joining, you know, these other guys, you know, to start Wellocity. And let's say you're able, you know, on the way out the door after giving your notice at Intel, you're able to stop that younger self and give that younger self one piece of advice before starting a business. What would that be and why, given what you know now, Jorge?
So I still have friends from that time at Intel that are still at Intel, right? And it's also well known what is called the golden cuffs, right? When you're getting one of these big companies that, you know, it's very difficult to leave. So I think that the piece of advice is, and that's what I took to myself, is I prefer to fail rather than not trying, right? I prefer not to regret not trying, right? Because, you know, you ask me now if I had a time machine, I thought you were going to ask me if I would change anything. And the answer is no, I wouldn't change that. I would take exactly the same path. Even if it wasn't successful, there was no exit, we closed or whatever, right? But I think that if you have that entrepreneur in you, don't wait, right? If you have that, go take the risk, jump into the pool. Hopefully there is water.
There you go. So, Jorge, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
So, LinkedIn, I think it's the best way. Mishne, there's only one, I think, or very few. So, Jorge Mishne, M-Y-S-Z-N-E. Happy to help and talk to people.
Amazing. Well, hey, Jorge, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Thank you, Alejandro. It was an honor for me. Pleasure.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening and see you at the next episode.